Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome to the Brian Lehr Show on WNYC. I'm Sarah Gonzalez. I'm a reporter here at WNYC, and I'm sitting in Brian's chair again this morning. Today, what New York City can learn about the warehouse fire in Oakland that killed 36 people. Also, people who committed serious crimes at a young age, it's nearly impossible for them to get parole. We'll talk about what Trump's win will mean for President Obama's legacy, and mice and ferrets uptown are getting a better flu vaccine than us humans. That's later. But first, we begin, of course, with the latest appointments from the Trump transition orbit. The president-elect has named the guy who is currently suing the EPA over environmental regulations to run the EPA. Scott Pruitt is the Oklahoma Attorney General, and he is a climate change denialist. Linda McMahon, the co-founder of the pro wrestling enterprise World Wrestling Entertainment, has been named to head the Small Business Administration. And the president-elect has nominated the CEO of a fast food chain as labor secretary, Andrew Puzder. For this, we're speaking with Chris Mooney from The Washington Post and political reporter Matt Nussbaum. Good morning, Chris and Matt, and thank you both for joining us.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I want to start first with the EPA pick, and Matt, we'll get to some of the other appointments in a little bit. But Chris, first, can you just tell us a little bit more about who Scott Pruitt is and what his background is?
Yeah, absolutely. Scott Pruitt is the Attorney General right now of Oklahoma. It's a state whose economy relies pretty heavily on the oil and gas industry, and he's clearly an ally of that industry, and he has a long record of challenging regulations by the Environmental Protection Agency, and his approach to things is basically the view that the EPA reaches too far, it gets in the way of what states want to do, and states should be able to regulate their own environments, and they care about clean air and clean water, and the EPA is trying to force them to do it one way rather than letting them do it their way.
And when you say he's an ally of the fossil fuel industry, can you just put that into context for us?
Well, he comes from a major oil and gas state, and in general, the EPA regulations, whether it's for methane emissions from oil and gas drilling, which he's objected to, or climate change, these kind of regulations require less emissions from the oil and gas sector. So he's been fighting those. So he's pretty much closely aligned with the industry in terms of the stances that he takes. One of the most controversial things so far has been that we've found at least one thing where he's written where he said there's a, quote, debate on climate change, and that debate is, quote, far from settled. And that's not really accurate. There's a very strong scientific consensus that humans are causing global warming. It's happening now. And if you talk to scientists about it, they're pretty worried about it.
Right. And so here's the appointment of another person who's going to be running a department whose beliefs sort of conflict with what the mission of the department is, the Environmental Protection Agency.
Right. That's the argument that a lot of people have made, is that the EPA is, you know, aligned in order to solve environmental problems, take environmental stances, and this is someone who's been opposing them sort of at every turn. And there's a great deal at stake here because the Obama administration has really used EPA to lead on a lot of things, most of all its climate change agenda. And so the first policy that everyone's going to be thinking about and watching is the Clean Power Plan, which is the centerpiece of the Obama climate policy, and this is restrictions on greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. And it's currently being sued over. This is the lawsuit that Pruitt and other Republican attorneys general have brought forward, and it's before the D.C. Circuit, the federal appeals court. So we have to see what happens there before we see what Pruitt might be able to do in order to undermine it.
And this is the lawsuit that's involving 28 states over Obama's Clean Power Plan, which basically would require every state to come up with a plan to reduce the carbon emissions from their power plants. And Pruitt was sort of a leader of that lawsuit. I want to read a statement from the Trump transition team about Pruitt and his appointment. The statement says that this is what Trump said about the appointment. It says, "For too long, the Environmental Protection Agency has spent taxpayer dollars on an out-of-control anti-energy agenda that has destroyed millions of jobs while also undermining our incredible farmers and many other businesses and industries at every turn. And Trump said Pruitt will, quote, reverse this trend and restore the EPA's essential mission of keeping our air and our water clean and safe. So keeping our air and our water clean and safe, if he's been fighting clean air regulations, like, do you know what they could possibly mean with that?
Well, you know, Pruitt himself has got comments that are very similar. I mean, his point of view, you know, to be fair to him, he would say people in Oklahoma care as much as anybody about clean air and clean water. We have our own way of regulating it. We don't like EPA telling us how to regulate it. So they would not accept that they're, you know, neither he nor President-elect Trump would accept that they're opposed to clean air and clean water. Nevertheless, when you're challenging regulations that are meant to create clean air, like the climate change regulations, for instance, climate change and air pollution are closely connected with each other. There's also clean water regulations that have been challenged as well. So, I mean, this is the debate, and it's really a debate over how far does the federal government go in order to impose stronger environmental protections.
And let's talk a little bit about the Paris Agreement. Nearly every country in the world has committed to taking action to fight climate change. And on the campaign trail, Trump said that he would pull the United States out of the agreement. Does this pick signal that's actually likely to happen?
In some ways, it certainly suggests that President-elect Trump is sticking with his campaign pledges, which included not only, quote, canceling the Paris Agreement, but also stopping the Clean Power Plan. But EPA doesn't actually make, it would be more the State Department that determines the role of the U.S. in the Paris Agreement. But the Clean Power Plan is central to the Paris Agreement in the sense that it's the core of the United States' promise to the world in terms of how it's cutting greenhouse gas emissions. The Obama administration brought forward the Clean Power Plan and said, look, we're doing this. We're taking this big action, and it's because of this big action that we're going to be able to reduce our emissions by 26% to 28% is their promise by the year 2025. So if you take out the Clean Power Plan and if you change other policies, then you're in effect undermining the Paris Agreement, even if you don't withdraw from it, because you're taking policy steps that reverse earlier steps that would have reduced emissions.
And what about the agreement between China and the United States, the two top polluters in the world? We signed an agreement in 2014 to reduce carbon emissions over the long term. If the U.S. pulls out of that, do you have any thoughts on how China will react? Like, will they pull out also?
Well, that agreement that you mentioned was actually a predecessor to the Paris Agreement, and the two are sort of consistent with one another. So the U.S. actually pledged in the China meeting to reduce its emissions pretty much similar to the reduction that I just described, which is its official Paris pledge. So it was the U.S. and China getting on the same team, getting on the same page, that allowed the Paris Agreement to happen, because once you had the two emitters, the two largest emitters in the world, agreeing, then it was much easier to get the rest of the world to agree. So that was the diplomatic breakthrough. What happens now is that if the U.S. steps back, all eyes do turn to China. I think that's already happening. China has affirmed, following President-elect Trump's election, that it thinks climate change is a big deal. And so far, observers expect China to continue to try to cut its own emissions, in part because they're very concerned about air pollution. They've had huge air pollution problems, and they know that that has to do with all the coal that's being burned there. So you see China trying to install more and more wind and solar and nuclear and gigantic hydroelectric dams. They're trying to do sort of every kind of energy change, and it's really going to be about how fast they change. But we don't think right now that just the election of Donald Trump is going to stop China from pursuing its energy policies that it already had.
Okay. And as we do with every new Trump appointment, we wonder, you know, how important the person is, the individual person who's going to be running the EPA. Can you tell us a little bit about environmental regulations put in place before Obama? I mean, I imagine the Trump administration can't undo a whole lot of regulations, or can they?
Well, what you have right now is legal scholars, law professors, regulatory experts. They're all trying to think about how much can you actually undo, because there's a lot of steps that you have to go through in order to unmake a regulation once it's been made and finalized, because there's a lot of steps that you have to go through in order to do that. So let's say the Clean Power Plan survives court challenges, but Pruitt wants to somehow unmake it. What he has to do is he has to actually replace it with a different regulation, and you have to go through a long public comment process, which is the typical regulatory process, and you have to build a record of evidence and reasoning of why you're going to do this. That opens them up to being challenged and sued by the environmental community, which will obviously object to them backing up. But there's actually something prior to the Clean Power Plan called the EPA's endangerment finding in 2009, which says that climate change is a problem that the EPA has to act on. And as long as that's in place, the EPA needs to do something. So some have speculated, will they try to reverse the endangerment finding? Well, that requires kind of reversing the science of climate change. So then you would have a giant science battle, and you would have lawsuits over that. So it's not easy to just completely change everything that the EPA is doing.
Okay. And listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the latest Trump appointments to the Environmental Protection Agency. And now we'll move on to the new labor secretary and the head of the Small Business Administration. But Matt, Chris, stay with us. We'll come back to the EPA. And listeners, join in on the conversation. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Okay, so Matt, Linda McMahon is the co-founder and CEO of the pro wrestling enterprise World Wrestling Entertainment. She is a millionaire whose husband, Vincent McMahon, is a billionaire. And Linda has been named to head the Small Business Administration. Matt, can you tell us more about Linda?
Yeah, so she sort of fits the mold of what we've been seeing from a lot of Trump appointments, which is that she doesn't have political experience, but she is a big-time Republican donor and has donated in the past to the Trump Foundation. And despite previous runs for office, has never held elected office. She fits the mold along with Puzder, who's going to labor, Mnuchin, who's going to Treasury, DeVos going to education, which is people who come from the world of business. That's something he said on the campaign trail he was going to do instead of taking more traditional politicians to fill some of these positions.
And a statement from the Trump team, the Trump team said that Linda is, quote, one of the country's top female executives, and that she helped grow WWE from a modest 13-person operation to a publicly traded global enterprise with more than 800 employees in offices worldwide. Matt, the McMahons and Trump have sort of a pretty long history together. Right. I mean, I remember being in elementary school and WWE was a big thing at the time. I don't know if it still is. And I remember watching some guy named Donald Trump. I was like in sixth grade, I think, in a wrestling ring in a suit, shaving the head of Vincent McMahon, who is Linda's husband. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yeah. Videos of Donald Trump taking place in some of these WWE stunts have come roaring back on the internet to everyone's enjoyment. But yeah, he does have a long connection with them and appears to be a fan of WWE. So I don't think this pick surprised too many people familiar with that, even though it might have surprised. It's not a traditional pick in a lot of ways.
But, you know, one of the things that stands out to me is that, you know, with Linda McMahon and even, you know, Trump's pick for EPA, it seems like Linda has experience that is related to the job that she would be doing if she's confirmed by the Senate, more so than some of Trump's other appointments. I mean, she is the CEO of a major enterprise, and she'll be stepping into a business role.
Yeah, so it's similar to the Department of Commerce in some ways, where it's a position more suited for someone from the private sector, someone who comes from the CEO background. In some of these other positions, education secretary, again, you know, secretary of labor, these big money donor picks are a little less less traditional. And I think that's where the labor secretary position, Andy Puzder, certainly raised a lot of eyebrows for people.
Okay, and we'll get to Andrew Puzder in a second, but let's go to some calls first. Bernadette in Brooklyn, welcome to WNYC. Bernadette?
Assume that the EPA Pruitt nominee will be confirmed, and I'd like to know what you think, what Republicans are unlikely to confirm him, and how can people contact these Republican senators so that this guy, who is extremely dangerous, is not confirmed. And also on the labor secretary nominee, again, another extremely dangerous guy.
Okay, so Chris, do you want to take that question?
Well, we don't know everything about how the confirmation fight's going to shape up yet. We do know that some Democrats, many Democrats, have come out very strongly on the Pruitt nomination and said that they oppose it. And Brian Schatz, of the Democrat from Hawaii, has said that it's going to be a litmus test for senators to say whether they support climate change or not. That's what we've heard so far. Obviously, Democrats do not have enough Democrats to stop it. They would have to have Republicans join their side. No indications at this point that I'm aware of who that would be in terms of Republicans who have previously taken stances where they say they do believe in climate change, but that may not be the, you know, the basis of their decision. I mean, certainly John McCain is someone that you would think about who actually put forward legislation in prior Congresses that was climate change legislation.
Okay, and let's go to another caller, Bob in Morristown, New Jersey. Welcome to WNYC.
Yeah, I think your guest is being naive about COVID and the ability to dismantle the regulations for the EPA. All you have to do is not enforce it. And that, you know, by the time that gets through court, it'll add millions of tons of pollutants to the atmosphere and to the water.
Okay, I'm having a hard time hearing you, but it sounds like you're saying that the way that they'll undermine the regulations is just to ignore them. And by the time it goes through the court process, I've already been a ton of pollutants in the water.
One of the prime tenets of the way these guys do business is they put fines in a cost of doing business category. So they don't, you know, they're perfectly willing to ignore the regulations and let the things fall where they may.
Chris, do you have any thoughts on that?
Certainly some have said that could be the strategy rather than actually reversing and replacing something like the Clean Power Plan. It would be to not enforce it. I think that environmental groups would challenge that. But, yeah, you know, to some extent, you can, by changing the way the agency operates, you can reduce its levels of activity. One more thing about the Clean Power Plan that I think is important to note is that the Clean Power Plan doesn't take effect. I mean, if it were to somehow survive all of the challenges that now face it, it wasn't meant to take effect until 2022. And what's happened in the United States is that we've had such a big energy system transformation anyway. Without the Clean Power Plan, we're burning so much more natural gas and so much less coal that it turns out that some of its goals are already being achieved anyway. So it's possible that much of the Clean Power Plan might just get achieved, not all of it certainly, but some of it might get achieved even without it happening.
Okay, and we're getting a lot of calls from people who want to talk about the EPA appointment, and we will get to some more in a bit, but I want to go back to Matthew Nussbaum at Politico to talk about Andrew Puzder, which is Trump's pick for the Labor Department. Will you tell us, Matt, a little bit more about Puzder?
Yeah, so he's the CEO of a fast food company that oversees Hardee's and some of those restaurants. And he fits into this pattern we've been seeing, I think Chris mentioned it, of people who sort of have an adversarial stance against the agency they'll be overseeing, right? So just like with the EPA, Pruitt has taken on environmental regulations, now running an agency set up to enforce those. Puzder, who's clashed with labor regulations, is now going to be in charge of the agency overseeing all of that. So we know he's a big opponent of the overtime rule, which was another one of President Obama's regulatory accomplishments. And so the future of that now is uncertain. He's praised automation in replacing low-wage workers, and he's spoken out against raising the minimum wage too high. He hasn't really specified a number, but this is not going to be someone who's advocating with the fight for 15. So, you know, just like I think I've mentioned Betsy DeVos at Education, someone who's a big fan of vouchers, now running that office, you're seeing people who are adversaries in some ways of the departments they're going to be running taking charge there. And we know that Obama was able to accomplish things mostly on the regulatory side during his second term, which makes those accomplishments all the more vulnerable now that these agencies are in Republican hands.
And Puzder has said that the $15 minimum wage would raise costs for employers and force them to rely on automated technology. He's also the guy who, so in California, where I'm from, Hardee's, we call it Carl's Jr. And if I'm not mistaken, I mean, he was the guy who ran the commercials with Paris Hilton eating the hamburger in like a bathing suit. And then last year, Puzder said, this is a quote, he said, I don't think there's anything wrong with a beautiful woman in a bikini eating a burger and washing a Bentley or a pickup truck or being in a hot tub. I think there's probably nothing more American. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You can see why for someone like Trump with his past in beauty pageants and very much a showman, why these two would get on well.
And do they, I mean, I've read a little bit that Puzder kind of has the same personality a little bit as Trump.
Yes, neither of them, adhere to some of the, I guess, politically correct is the term people would use now. Puzder has his own past of controversial statements. So in that way, I think he is sort of like Trump.
And what does the Labor Department do? Like, what is the role of the Labor Secretary?
Well, it's the department oversees, you know, complaints about workers' rights, so occupational hazard issues. They enforce overtime rules, wage rules. They take complaints and enforce those. And people have mentioned that the company Puzder oversees, some of these restaurants have actually been the subject of a lot of these complaints about withholding wages and that kind of stuff, though these were mostly restaurants that had been franchised out, so not directly under his oversight as CEO. But it also oversees the labor relations board, or is connected to that, and Donald Trump is going to have, I think, two appointments to that, which has raised a lot of questions for people because his company has ongoing disputes before the labor relations board.
All right, and let's go to some more callers. Bister in Washington Heights. Bister, welcome to WNYC. Oh, okay, we lost Bister. So let's go to Kathy in Manhattan. Kathy, are you there? Also not there. Kathy, okay, there we go. Kathy?
Yes, I'd love your commentator to speak on the fact that Trump, Bannon, and Puzder have all been accused of domestic violence, abusing their spouses or previous spouses.
Can Chris or Matthew, can any of you guys speak to that?
Well, in the case of Puzder, I know that she has since withdrawn those complaints or those accusations. But, yes, I think that's certainly a pattern that some people have noticed.
Kathy, what do you think about that?
I mean, I think the fact that three people, Trump, Bannon, and Puzder, have all been accused of violence against women, and the fact that Trump has only appointed three women to his cabinet is rather striking, given the inherent misogyny in a lot of Bannon's writings, et cetera. It's really troubling to me as a 35-year-old woman who lives in Manhattan.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Kathy. And let's go now to Peter in Manhattan. Peter, welcome to WNYC. Hey, Peter.
A couple of times it's been said that it's a reference that Obama has had accomplishments in regulatory this or that. The whole point of the problem that people have with this word accomplishment is that what he has done by regulating and not going through the legislative process is exactly, they are not accomplishments. And this is, I think, a big problem. There is a legislative process, and if Obama had been able to accomplish something, he would have done so with the law, by making laws with and working with Congress. They're not accomplishments. And secondly, I might point out, I really don't understand why there is any kind of smirking or whatever about some of these things that people have said, whether or not Paris Hilton is in a commercial or whether or not Donald Trump shaved somebody's head. I mean, it's entertainment, and you're mixing these kind of weird, very judgmental things with a policy commentary. I don't get it.
Okay, I appreciate your comments, Peter. I want to go to another caller. Let's go to David in Freehold, New Jersey.
Good morning. Peter kind of stole my thunder. I wanted to say, echo the same thing. But I wanted to say, even the Affordable Care Act, Obama was so partisan about it and was so not able to get one Republican on his side that it's going to go away. And the liberals went crazy when people said he was a community organizer. And all he could do was agitate. And that legacy is coming back to bite him. He didn't know how to work with people at all. Maybe your guest can speak to that.
This is about the Affordable Care Act specifically?
The Affordable Care Act is going to go by the same way. Because he was not able to get a Republican on his side. Not one. He was at 70% approval rating. He was not able to convince to make some sort of horse trade deal, to do something to get a Republican on his side. That failure is going to kill the Affordable Care Act. If he had, would have had one Republican on his side, the Republicans would not have been able to oppose it the way they have been for so many years, and it would have stayed. But his inability to govern, to execute, to do something like an executive, killed him. He was a community organizer, and the liberals went crazy when we said that, but it's true.
All right. Thank you for your call, David. I don't know if anybody, Chris or Matthew, if you guys want to speak to that.
Well, there's a general point that I can refer to, which is that, yes, as far as environment and EPA goes, I think there's no doubt that the Obama administration would have preferred to be able to have Congress pass a law to do something about climate change rather than using the EPA process to do it. I mean, they believe that that didn't happen, and then the EPA stepped in, and they believe that it's based on existing laws passed by Congress that allow the EPA to do this, specifically the Clean Air Act. Of course, that itself is something that Republicans disagree with, but there's no doubt that they would have preferred to have a new piece of legislation happen.
Okay, and before we go, we're going to have to wrap up, but Matt, I want to ask you another question. Sort of a general question. For all of the appointments that have come in where there has been criticism that the people who have been nominated for certain cabinet positions maybe don't have a lot of experience in those fields, this can't be the first time that that has happened, right? When a new presidential administration comes in, I imagine that there have been people given cabinet positions where they don't necessarily have a background in the field. Can you put some of this into context for us?
Certainly. I mean, every time you're going to have some appointments who are from the private sector or who don't have a lot of experience in specific fields. But I think what's jumped out to people more here is that there seem to be two categories of appointments. You have retired military leaders from Mattis and Kelly, and then you have these CEOs and former Republican donors. And I think it's just raised some eyebrows in that there's very few traditional picks, people from Congress, people who have served in these administrations. There are some, certainly Jeff Sessions and Elaine Chao. But I think the reliance on CEOs to this level, instead of, say, one Penny Pritzker the way President Obama has, having so many is outside the norm. But again, this is something that Donald Trump ran on. He ran on his own business experience touting that. So I don't think it's unexpected by any means.
Okay. And I think we're going to leave it there. Chris and Matthew, thank you for joining us. Chris Mooney is a reporter at The Washington Post, and Matthew Nussbaum is a reporter at Politico. Coming up, what we know about what caused the devastating fire in an Oakland warehouse that killed 36 people, and fire safety laws here in New York City. We'll be right back.